This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Right. We heard that you were having fun chewing up some of the scenery.
Really?
Yeah.
Who said I was chewing scenery? Did you say that?
Specifically said it.
All right, so I asked for toothpicks. What can I say? I think this is the best role I've ever had in a film. So I'm having a lot of fun.
That's a pretty big statement.
It's a really deep layered character, and that to me is just nothing is more exciting than that.
Can you tell us a bit about him? What's his deal?
He's he wears one suit with one tie and one shirt, and it always looks really, really good.
Well, you look pretty sharp out there.
Yeah, thanks.
Like
fire and
smoke.
A little wind blown, but that's all right. Usually dies down around midnight. It is funny the way that, you know, the wind currents here, they really do. Around midnight, it goes. So, we'll see what happens.
There's a double-sided facet to your character. I mean, is it, as the movie progresses, does it change the side that you play?
My understanding of the events changes. And when that changes, I learned something. Yeah. It's very cool.
It's interesting because we want to talk about stuff, but everyone's being a little guarded with certain things.
No, around here?
Yeah,
really?
Exactly.
Come on.
So could you talk a little bit about trying to talk about your character, talking about the movie, saying a lot, but saying little?
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I really am, you know, because... like so many things, you know, and in particular this film, you know, there are things that are just, you're just going to love to see later. It's just one of those, you know? And, but there's so much that we can talk about that is really exciting. You know, Nick's in this film, which is just beyond awesome. You know, I've been a huge fan for his for so long, and then, you know, and then when I read this script and knowing that he was going to do it, and then you read it, and it's like, oh, talk about perfect guy, perfect role. And I feel that about so many people in this film. Billy Burke playing Jonah King, the same way. I've never worked with Billy before, never met him before, but he's, you know, I can't imagine anybody else playing the part. Can't imagine anybody else directing this movie, you know, besides Patrick. Another guy that I really think is, you know, just right time, perfect guy, perfect sensibilities to tell the story.
Could you talk a little bit, this is a hard R, really violent film. Could you talk, was that something that
is really safe to say right there, yeah.
Was this something that attracted you to the role, or were you a little bit hesitant with how violent, you know, and everything?
Well, you know, the really hard R element of it, of the film, comes in many ways, you know, throughout the movie, and character and action, but you know, that's not really the driving force behind the character that I play. But what attracted me to the film was the very first time that I read it. You know, the story. It's just great dialogue, and you know. A really, as you say, a really tough story, a really hard rated R story, but at the same time, you know, has a through line of you know, a journey that's driven by one man's heart, and it's, you know, and that's, make no mistake, it has a heartbeat throughout it, and it's really powerful at the end, you know, to get to that place, and it never loses sight of that. So, I hope that answers the question.
Can you talk about, you know, obviously without giving it away, I'm assuming when audiences first see you, they don't necessarily know where you're from or what you're
for sure.
From. Can you talk about what that scene is? When will audiences first see you in the movie? Like, well, how do you feel?
Is that all right? Yeah, it's all right. I'll check in with the Summit people. yes, the first time that you see it, well, you know, at that point in the film, I don't know, maybe we're 20 pages into the movie or something, you've seen so much at that point, and colorful characters, and grungy, and places, and visually, you know, and then slap the 3D on top of that. It's just, you know, it's been like eye candy. And then all of a sudden, this character shows up, and, well, there's no one else looking like him. And hopefully, you know, he has, you know, I've found the rhythm that's the right rhythm for him. It's different, and because he is different. So the first time you see him is I'm just walking on a road, and then I run into some people that we've already met in the film, and it's a woman, a waitress, and the short order cook, and we have a little exchange, and it's. You know, it's very interesting, and has a little ballet to it. And
are they alive at the end of the scene?
Oh yes. I'm quite smitten with the waitress, I think. Yeah. No, every, you know, people live after they meet me. It's pretty much.
No, pretty much.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense about your character that even after you've seen the movie, there's still a lot of backstory that you have no idea about.
Yeah, for sure. But I think after you see the movie, I think you have a real strong understanding of, oh, okay.
When you go into a performance like that, do you come up with your own backstory even if it never appears on screen?
Well, it was great. It was great to talk about, you know, because one of the greatest pleasures in my life is to have as much time as I can before we start working on something. So I knew about this, you know, a little over 2 months before we started working on it, so I could, you know, many, many bottles of really good red wine and sitting up and thinking about it and calling Patrick to talk about it. Hey, Patrick, what do you think of that idea? That's exactly what I'm thinking about. Or he would throw me something to be like, very cool, very cool. But the greatest joy in getting ready for the film is, how do I say this? There are not many reference points for the journey, so you kind of got to define it yourself. And with great conversations with Patrick and getting to meet Todd when we got here, you know, it was really just a thrill to find it. And you know, when we got here, you know, I showed up a week before we started shooting the film, and it was great because we had time for rehearsals and that. And those were different sort of rehearsals than I'd ever had before in anything, because I just wasn't sure that if, you know, the way that I'm walking and talking and thinking, does this make any sense? I remember when our first AD, Steve Danton, who's great and is the maestro out there, when the very first scene that we ever rehearsed, and I said, can I have large sides, you know? And I was reading it, and he teased me. He says, you're not off book. And I said, no, and I won't be till Monday morning, because I didn't want to be. I didn't want to set anything. I didn't know. We're still trying to figure it out and what feels right. And we'd get in the moment, and that time that we spent rehearsing inside the, did you walk in the little auditorium over there? Like our set, our sound stage? Yeah. What's it called?
The set in there?
Yeah, what is that, that auditorium?
No,
Colosseum?
Well, it's Colosseum, but it's the motel set we're talking about.
Yeah, but the Colosseum itself, you know, in there, we rehearsed a lot of stuff in there and in the hallways, and invaluable to spend that time with them, especially for this.
You've played many different roles. How are you with rehearsal with all the different parts you've had? Are you one of these people that really, you know, rehearses for everything as much as you can? Do you like to improvise a lot when you're filming, or stuff?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was younger, I never wanted to rehearse because I thought, oh, man, somebody's going to figure out, I don't know what I'm doing. But now I like to spend that time. I like to really spend that time and figure it out and it's great because it's the time to be open, and you know, rehearsal is to try something that doesn't work and to be able to do that. And that's hard to do because you always want to try what your impulse thought is, and you know, is that the one? Is it, you know, could that work? But sometimes you have to, you know, sometimes the scene is a sad scene, but you have to play it, you know, with a laugh to it to find out that like that doesn't work, or there's really part of that in it. And that's what rehearsal's for, and we took that time.
A lot of actors say that they enjoy taking first two or three takes, or they find that those are their best performances, and others think that, you know, they want to go 15 or 20 to find the right thing. How are you as an actor?
I like, you know, that first 2-3 foot, well, that's part of the thing that I always say to Patrick, which is, you got a lot of film, right, Patrick? Because first 2-3-4, which is when everybody's might be ready to move on, is when now it's time to try things. You know, I'd like to start it off by the thing that we worked on and the impulse and that, but, you know, usually by 2-3-4, if you feel like, you know, you got close to maybe realizing some of that, hopefully, then you always got to have two at the end to, like, shake it loose, to really try an impulse thing that might not be there. But then as far as improv goes, you know, a lot of that might happen in the rehearsal. Great scripts, you know, also, too, I'm an actor out of New York, and you don't improv a playwright's words. You try to, you know, he wrote them for a reason, try to find what the moment was. And I think that about, you know, really good scripts, and I think that about this script. I honestly, maybe in the spur of the moment, had an impulse to improv a moment of some way, but I never felt the desire to do that in any sort of dialogue, with the dialogue, to improv any sort of dialogue. It's so good the way that it is. I really, there's no need to do that. Just play with what he wrote, and there's depth to it, and find it.
The character always seems so, he has a calm about him. Has it ever been a point where it's hard to not get too excited and stay within that level?
Well, you know, I don't like to watch dailies. I don't like to watch video playback unless I have to. We're doing a second unit shot the other day, and they said, can you watch the playback, because it has to do with something that you do with your arm, so we can sync it up. It has this motion to it. And I watched the playback, and as soon as I watched it, I was like, oh, that's absolutely not the thing to do, because it didn't have the calm or whatever. And I was like, oh, we've got to do two more, you know, to try this. As soon as I saw it, you know, I got it. But I think pretty much Patrick has his eye on that all the time, and I do. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Have you ever worked with 3D cameras before? Or
no.
And has that changed at all the process in terms of, like, you know, the blocking and stuff that maybe you were, you wouldn't expect, like, you go into the scene and you thought, oh, I'd be here, and for some reason I'm here because they needed for the 3D?
You know, not really. I never felt that there was ever a moment like that. But not knowing that it's 3D and I have a little one and going to see Up and Monsters versus Aliens and everything else, you know, and 3D today is just so cool. And so you kind of get a sense of motion, but I don't think it's a playable thing. Though we had a scene once in a church, and I had to come in and I had to point to someone. I had to point to him and look at him and say, what is that? And Dave, our A camera operator, said, you know, Bill, come in like this. And then I got it. I was like, yeah, that would be, you know, there's all of a sudden this coming right by your head, you know, sort of thing. And that was like, oh, yeah. So, you know, then you start twisting your hand. It's like, stop, just point. But I don't think it's anything you really... I haven't found anything you play it for. They're just catching the action, which is good. I'm glad that that's not. But we talk about it. Nick and I talk about it sometimes. You know, we're learning. You know, we're learning kind of little things. But I haven't planned anything yet. You know.
I'm curious. You've played a lot of roles. You've been in a lot of different things, from TV, movies. What do you mostly get recognized for? I'm curious.
Well, it used to be As the World Turns, you know, for back in the 80s, Josh, the misunderstood farmhand. I'm glad that that's moving on. You know, military folks, Black Hawk Down. You know, walking through an airport, guys, man, it's hard to recognize anybody in Black Hawk Down. You know, it's fast, it's moving, everybody looks the same. And military guys will just shoot right across and, like, thank you, buddy. You got it, man. You know, I did a series a couple of years ago, Invasion, that was canceled after one season. And that's a biggie. Because I remember at the time, everybody saying the Nielsen ratings were like, it's the show is just, you know, I had no viewing audience whatsoever. Just nobody was watching it. I cannot. That's probably got to be in the top three of how many people go. I can't. What is it coming back? It's like, no, it's 6 years ago, buddy. But that happens a lot. Invasion. And, you know, and then, you know, weird things. I had a couple come up to me on a beach. We're walking with their kids. I was in Massachusetts like a year ago. And I only bring this up because it's happened a lot. Like, obscure. Sir, I was at the Indy 500 in this really loud party, you know, after the race with all the drivers. And this couple comes up and they're like, same as this couple on the beach with kids. And they come up and they start quoting lines from Drowning Mona. It's like, you know, come on, hey, shit salad! And I'm like, wow. I wish a lot more people, like, you know, people are just starting to talk about the amateurs a little bit because it's playing on Showtime. You know, Jeff won the Oscar and I did this little film. Has anybody seen The Amateurs?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, this is sitting right up there with, like, that's like my number 1-2 for, like, best times I've ever had working on something. The Amateurs is just, you know, personal. Anytime somebody mentions The Amateurs, I stop what I'm doing and, like,
really?
So, yeah, cool. That makes me excited when people see that.
You had a very good cast in that film.
Oh, it was great. It was great. I mean, I think it was one of those, you know, everything that could have gone wrong with a movie went wrong with that one, and whoever had it, and I don't know all the behind the scenes stuff, but it just floundered and got lost and came out for like 11 minutes and then now they're playing it on Showtime on Saturday night, so it's great. People are seeing The Amateurs.
Do you find that when a movie's playing on Showtime or HBO, that all of a sudden the next day you're like, why is everyone talking to me about this one movie?
Showtime or HBO and something pops up on there. You know, that's you know, especially with a film like The Amateurs, knowing that Showtime was going to air it, it's like, great. Because, well, you know, who else is going to see it? I mean, people will see it, but, you know, that's a way of having a lot of people see it and then mention it to someone else and that. And I'm just really happy for Michael Traeger, who wrote and directed that, that it's got a little, you know, it's getting a little bit of an audience, a little bit of play right now.
You mentioned your positive experiences on Invasion. Doing features right now, is it going back to TV, signing on, something that you're looking forward to, or are you trying to stick in the feature arena for a while?
You know, I don't know what's next. I think you never know. It's all timing and right role and looking for the right thing and exciting thing. You know, I always feel that there's no doubt that I think to work in film is a bit more of a creative journey. And, you know, not that I don't put the same, you know, time or heart into something that's on television. But I don't think right now I'm ready for, you know, another 22-episode season of a show right now. Can't watch till tomorrow when I get it. I'm in! No, I just don't think that it's the thing right now. I think I need to do something else when I finish this that's really, you know, as cool as this.
If I may ask, what were you working on before you came to this?
Nothing. Absolutely. Work cleaning out the garage. I built an office. I was at Costco. It's what I've been doing. I worked on something in the fall called The Big Bang. Tony Kranz directed this film with Antonio Banderas and Sam Elliott, and kind of a film noir piece. And we'll see. It's a good time working.
Just coming back to this role, is it a very physical role for you? We noticed you got a little...
Do you see that purple little stitch in there? Is that cool or what?
Seems like your character took a shot.
Absolutely. That's a 3D moment. Wait till you see how that happens. I was aware of that. I was aware of the 3D-ness of that one. Is it really physical? No, because I think everybody knows the character's name, right?
The accountant.
Yeah, the accountant. I think the accountant has an ease and a grace that he doesn't want to get dirty. It doesn't have. It's not even about getting dirty. It's a matter of, like, it's not necessary. So, yeah, there's some. Well, you'll see some things in the film when it's
you
all said.
You get to dispatch a few people.
It happens. Yeah, gracefully. Hopefully.
What is he? Is he just arrogant? He thinks he's above them. And
maybe he is. I think I have to leave it on that.
How are you enjoying spending time in Shreveport?
I grew up in Buffalo, New York. Shreveport is Buffalo with a big muddy river. Same restaurant, same folks. I just wanted to be, for the suit and everything, I'm a pretty trim guy, but I wanted to be just a little bit thinner, you know, 12 pounds or something like that. And so, you know, I can't do that at home because my wife is Lebanese and Albanian and just cook the daylights out of anything. So I came here a week early, got an extra fridge in my room. I have, at all times right now, there's non-fat cottage cheese, 2 pounds of turkey, lettuce, non-fat vinaigrette dressing. So it's been, I haven't really explored the restaurant scene here, which people have found some really good restaurants here. So I've just been eating pretty trim. So I really haven't, you know, I'm like in a habitat. You know, I go from the Hilton to the rental car to the downtown Y. I swim my mile, I do the rest of what I do. I go back, I go to work. If I have 4 days off, you know, I get in a plane, I go home. And so I've been home a lot. You know, after we got here, after that first Saturday night, I think the next 6 weekends I was home, which is great. And then the last 2 weekends I've been here. So I've been getting out about a little bit more. But the people are really nice, and our crew, and yeah, everybody's good.
There are a lot of badass vehicles in this movie. Do you get to commandeer any of them?
Not the ones that I would like. Not that 69 Charger, and not the 70 Chevelle, the 454 Chevelle. I hop in a car and I hop in a truck.
I sense a bit of disappointment that you didn't get to drive any of these things.
It's okay. It's all right. Sorry. Why do you got to bring that up, man? I mean, we're just getting over it, and I've adjusted. No, it's cool, really cool stuff with the cars. But I get to ride other fun vehicles, like hydrogen trucks, stuff like that. Very cool.
Are you still talking about the cars? Have you not talked about them at all?
That's the only question he's been asked about the cars.
That's true. It's the only one.
What's Todd like?
Todd?
No,
don't go there. Todd is somewhere between, like, a... No, I can't. That could. He's writing something else for me, so you can't ask me something like that right now. Todd is my brother, buddy. Tight.
I'm still writing.
So we've heard this is inspired by, you know, like old 70s car chase action movies and stuff. Are you a fan of those types of movies yourself?
Yeah, but that was, you know, the 70s were my high school and college, all within the 70s. So not that I remember everything. 75 is a blank, but otherwise the rest of it was pretty good. Yeah, for sure. You know, I had a 69 Roadrunner when I was a kid, and I had it for 13 days, and I came home one day, and my parents were on the driveway, and they said, meet the new owner. And I'm like, what? And they said, no, we got calls for like 12 days in a row of you burning rubber. You will wrap it around a tree, and you're selling it right now. And I was like, yeah. And it was too much car for a 16-year-old. So I always swore if I ever got another one. And so in 95, when I was out in L.A. working on this film called Albino Alligator, my agent at the time called me and he says, I got your car. I found your car. And I'm like, I'm not looking for a car. And he said, no, you're looking for this car. So he took me up near Santa Clarita, and the guy opened up the garage door, and he took the cover off the car. And I was like, what am I going to do with that? I mean, I wanted to get a car so I didn't rent cars, you know, when I came in from New York. It's too beautiful. It's a 1970 Vitamin C Orange Roadrunner, 36,000 original miles, black bucket seats with a pistol grip. Just killer. And now it sits in my garage. So there it is. There's my little car. See?
Ooh, it's a beaut.
Yeah.
That's so
always saw, and they keep hitting the buttons in his face. But,
oh, wow.
So, you know, when I read this script, I'm like, I know cars!
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's my...
Wait, is that in New York?
No, it's in L.A. where I live now. London.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just a super cherry. Yeah. So I love what's going on.
That's a car show
cars.
In Burbank on Friday nights.
Bob's Big Boy. I do bring it up there.
Yeah.
I didn't for a long time because when I first got it, you know, one time I took it up there and I went to put it in reverse and I went, oh man, just don't come with your car if you're ever going to do that again, Bill. So now I have a little more confidence, in not dropping the tranny on it.
It's a lot of car even for now.
Yeah, you know, modern cars are a lot faster than that, but they don't look like that, and they don't sound like that, and it's just so cool. And I don't drive it. I mean, when I got it, I had 36,000 miles on it, and that was in 95. 15 years later, I have 43. So 7,000 miles and 10
years. I mean, do you ever just take it out occasionally on the weekend and just...
You know, it usually happens when I'm sitting around and my young boy's doing his homework and the sun's going down and it's just kind of perfect out, and I'm like, now, right now. Because in L.A., you know, to have a car like that, you can't have a car like that in the East Coast. New York State Thruway is 65. You go over 72, you're getting a ticket. But in L.A., we all know what it's like. You're up on the 210, you know, where I live in that direction out there.
Yeah.
You get up on the 210 and you catch a little quarter-mile pocket between you and the next car, and everybody's doing 80 now. And then you just catch a little pocket and just... Very cool. I have two boys, 18 and 8.
Are you worried that the other one's going to pull a Ferris Bueller?
No, but I did say to my older son once, when we moved into our house, I said, do you like the house? You know, someday this will be yours. And he's like, nah, give it to Van. I'll take the little one. I'll take the car. I'm like, Sam, you're a bright kid. Go with the house. But no, I'll take the car. So he's into the car.
Any more questions for Drive Angry?
For what?
Drive Angry.
No, okay.
I think
very cool.
Thank you very much.
Listen, thanks. You guys are sticking around. You're going to have lunch?
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, because our caterers are killer. They're great.
Yeah. Louisiana food?
It's just whatever they make. I've worked with them a couple of years ago, and I just love it.
Thanks a lot.
Good to meet y'all. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys, from Summit.